Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland is where we call home, and it's just glistening in the Fukushima sun. And the rads are so high that everybody has a part-time job as an energy-saver light bulb, which is good for the environment. And my very special guest today is Barry Taff from barrytaff.net. That's T-A-F-F, like taffy without a Y. You know, sometimes you have to realize that things don't have a reason. There is no why. He has a book, and it's named Aliens Above, Ghosts Below. And that's what we're going to be discussing today for a shorter episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, just 2 hours with Barry here, unless he reconsiders at the third hour. Which you probably won't. Okay, Barry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Would you elucidate just a little bit about yourself and what it is you do, mate?
Okay, I've been a parapsychologist for 45 years. What got me into this were when I was young, a kid, I was having all these recurring experiences, telepathic, precognitive, out-of-body, things like, and they were common. I thought everyone had them, and it got me in a lot of trouble. I also could diagnose people medically. Before the word medical intuitive existed, I was having these experiences as a kid. They're discussed on my website and a little bit in my book. And so what happened is I got to the point where I wanted to understand more of what's going on with me and why is it that my friends and family aren't having these experiences. So I wrote a woman by the name of Dr. Thelma Moss, who ran a lab at UCLA back in the late 60s, and she never responded. I called her. She never responded. So sometime later, I met one of her research assistants who was a graduate student in the school, in my college, and through him, I met Dr. Moss, and I met her in her home in Beverly Hills, which is like 2 minutes away from where I lived, in 1969. And she, the first thing she did is she gave me her keys to hold to do psychometry. And I described a lot of things. The one thing I remember most vividly is I saw a fat blonde woman that had blue eyes with a loud mouth, kind of obnoxious, kind of a bore, very intense. And her name was Shelley. And it was really vivid to me. Thelma Moss's best friend was the actress Shelley Winters. And that was an unflattering, if correct, description of her. And then I picked up other things. So Dr. Moss ran a study on me, started in 69, concluded a few years later at UCLA, and they published it in a medical journal some years later. Okay, so you're a psychic. So, I mean, okay, then what? What do we do then? So I became a research assistant in the lab. I was focusing in several different areas. In the lab, we were doing experiments and seeing if we could train people to enhance whatever latent psychic abilities they might have, telepathic, clairvoyance, precognitive, whatever. And that was the work in the lab. That was interesting. We got a lot of good results out of that, much better than we expected. And then the really intriguing work was the work in the field, and that was investigating cases of hauntings and poltergeists and doppelgangers and things like apparitions and things like that. And over the course of 45 years now, I've investigated over 4,000 cases. And the things I've learned shocked me, because if I could go back in time now to 1969 and tell myself what I know now, what we've learned, my young self would say to me, you're out of your mind. What are you talking about? Things we never expected to be relevant are what we expected to learn, we're not learning. So that's what brought me here. And on my website, I talk about a lot of this. In my book, I talk about more of it.
Would you tell me exactly how long has this website and book been out? What kind of a response have you been getting?
Let's see. The book came out in 2011. I think it was June 2011. So it's been out for, almost 3 years now. I've gotten really good write-ups on Amazon, good comments. There was one angry man from the United Kingdom who wrote a very odd response on some other site, and he said, I don't believe a word this man is saying, this man being me. He said, how come all the women he's dated are gorgeous starlet types? And he's had more experiences than anyone in the world has had, which of course isn't true. And I wrote him back, and I said, I think I taste sour grapes here, because he was jealous. And look, this is the life I've led. But in general, I've got good response to my book. My book is designed to inform, educate, and entertain. Actually, it should be the other way around, entertain, inform, and educate. When you're done with it, you'll know a lot more about what's going on out there than you did before you read it. I try to get to the heart of the things and forget the crap and focus on what's really relevant. And the website's been up for almost 4 years, and I've got, 86 published blogs covering everything from cases I've worked on to UFO phenomena to disinformation to, everything, cryptozoology to anomalous archaeology. And I'm not trying to promote anyone's work. These are things I've written, other people have written, that I think are relevant to what I'm trying to do. And that's what I'm trying to convey. So a lot of it's on ufology, a lot of it's on parapsychology. The work we did in the lab, for example, some of the cases, some of the photos we were able to get over the years on different cases. And I've been getting good feedback, by and large. It's not going to make any money off this, which was I never intended to be honest with you, but it'd be nice if it happened. So here we are down the road, and I do interviews, go on talk shows. And I did a show actually 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, this ninth season premiere of Ghost Adventures. I never even heard of the show because I don't watch these things. It's kind of those paranormal reality shows bore me. So I was introduced to them by a friend of theirs who I knew, and I know, I should say. And I told him, I will not go on the show if you ask me to lie about myself or my work or my cases. They wanted me to talk about a specific case, which is spoken of slightly in my book. It's also one of the latter blogs on my website. The blog is called Cielo Drive Convergence, the Ultimate Field Laboratory, and it's about one of the most extraordinary cases I've ever investigated, that I went to it 20 times over the course of the year, from 2005 to 2006. I passed out the first time I was there, I passed out the last time I was there, and I got sick every other time. So my body was telling me it didn't like the environment. So that's what I do.
And what kind of lessons do you reckon you can... I've got to ask something. What started you off upon this whole journey? Because nobody goes into an alternative field, to my knowledge, without either, A1, something happening to them, or somebody introducing them to the information. Which was it for you?
Well, it was both. As I said, when I was growing up, I was having recurring telepathic, out-of-body, precognitive experiences, for example. The day JFK was inaugurated, I bet my father $25, which was a lot of money back then, that he would be killed in office right around Thanksgiving in 1963. And my father went, "What?" I go, "I don't know. That's what's going through my head." And of course, it happened, and my father paid me the money, and my parents didn't speak to me for about 2 months. They were kind of freaked out by it. Another example, I am 10 years old in the fifth grade at recess playing in the courtyard. This little blonde girl named Christine is walking towards me, and I'm looking at her. And I can't describe this any better. It's like literal X-ray vision coming on, like in Man of Steel in the first act where you see young Clark Kent in school, and he suddenly can look through people. That's what I experienced. And I'm looking at her going, "What?" So when I saw under her dress, there was a plastic bag and a tube going into her side. Now, I know it's a colostomy. I didn't know that at the age of 10. I'd never heard of it. So I went up to Christine, and I asked her, "What's that bag and tube going into your body?" She turned red as a beet, started screaming, got the teacher. They dragged me in the principal's office. The principal said, "Did you look under her dress or sneak in the girl's bathroom?" I said, "I didn't either. It just turned on." He goes, "What do you mean it turned on?" "You know, like X-ray vision, like Superman." He went, "What? Oh, come on." So I looked at him. He's yelling at me, complaining, and I saw he had an appendectomy scar. Now I'd call it a keloid. I didn't know that at the age of 10, but I saw it, and I go, "It looks like it's always inflamed, like it's purple. It never healed that well." He turned purple. He called my parents, "What's going on?" And they said, "Look, we know he can do this. Just, we don't want to talk about it. We just weather." So the principal told me, "If you do it again, you're going to get kicked out of school, and I'll have you arrested." I never spoke of it again in school. It's those types of experiences. These things have been going on my whole life. It's, like I said, I'm trying to think. Back in college, Upper Division College, it was 1970, I was dating this girl named Sharon. When I met her in the psychology department where I was working with her. So stunning girl. Looked like the actress Jane Krakowski, almost exactly like her. Very attractive. So we're dating, everything's fine. Having a dream, and in the dream, I'm in the back seat of a car, and I see her in the front passenger seat. I see someone driving. I didn't even notice it was me, but I assumed it was. I couldn't see the dashboard of the car. We're driving down a street. We turn into the cul-de-sac where she lived. Suddenly, a large car flies out and hits us head-on. A lot of damage. The person driving looked like they were dead. She was all bloody and broken, and I thought, oh, God. So I kept having the dream over and over. So I finally told Sharon. I said, look, I can't see you anymore. She goes, what? So I told her the dream, and she goes, oh, come on. Now, she lived about 25 miles away. It's like, big deal. Gas was 25 cents a gallon back then. I mean, who cares? I said, look, I'm not risking our lives for this. It's not worth it. She got really angry, and it ended. A few months later, she's dating someone else, and everything I described happened, except I wasn't driving. The other person was. I misinterpreted the event. I wasn't driving. It happened. Everything. He died instantly. She was badly injured in the crash. I didn't change anything. I misinterpreted what I saw. Another example, 1975. I was at my girlfriend's, sound asleep, and in the dream, I'm piloting a 747 airliner. Now, I've been an aviation buff since I was a kid. I knew a lot about aircraft, commercial and military. I see the cockpit. We're approaching South Africa because you don't fly at sufficient altitude to see continental features like that. And suddenly, the drone of the turbofans go dead. Instrument panel goes dark. We're dropping like a lead balloon. We hit, explode. I come flying out of bed, sweating bullets. And my girlfriend, Darlene, what happened? I said, I just crashed a 747. Now, they had just gone operational the previous year, so they were relatively new. Their track record was perfect, no accidents. I made some calls the next day, and nope, no one ever crashed at 747. They were perfect flying record. A few days later, the first 747 went down on approach to South Africa, and I saw it as a red-white plane. It was a TWA. I was correct. So what did I see? If that happened today and I called the FAA, I would be arrested. They assume I blew the plane up, which is, of course, absurd. But in those days, I don't know the flight number. I don't know what day it's going to be on, what time, what month, what year. All I knew, I saw it. I experienced it. So things like that were real common to me. And but the medical intuitive thing is amazing. I do it, and example, one of the latter blogs on my website, the last one I published is called A Different Kind of Psychic, Being a Medical Intuitive. And last 4th of July, one of my colleagues was in town. He doesn't live here anymore, with his new girlfriend and her kids, and I knew nothing about them. He wanted me to diagnose them, psychically. Okay, sure. So they come in, it was very warm, and I'm looking at the woman is like in her, late 30s, early 40s, and the kids are like in 7 or 8, I don't know. And I'm looking at the boy first, and I saw the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. In terms of the medical thing I do, the frontal lobes of his brain were missing. It was like a big vacuous space in there, like a balloon had deflated. And I watched, and I was looking again. What the?
It's amazing. It sounds like a U.S. president.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, it sounds like any politician. But the scary part was, he heard me say this, and he goes, "Oh yeah, the kid has cortical encephalopathy, which is." Cortical encephalitis, the disease eats away part of your brain. So what I saw was correct. It looked like a balloon had deflated the front part of his skull. And the mother started to freak out a little bit. Then I looked at her and I said, wow, you must have smoked a lot when you were younger. Your lungs looked like old brown paper bags with dark spots on them. You would have had COPD, and she turned white. Her eyes almost came out of her head. She jumped up, grabbed the kids, and they ran out of my place. And my colleague went, and she said, you told Barry. He goes, nope, didn't tell him a thing, and she didn't. He didn't tell me a thing. But I could see it like it was right in front of me. It was very easy to do. And sometimes it happens spontaneously. I This is in 1999. An old girlfriend popped up. This is also, I talk about this on my website. Haven't seen her in 20-odd years or something like that. Looked great. No lines, no wrinkles, no fat. I mean, really incredible. So it's a warm day. It was late spring. We're outside talking. Where she's wearing a halter top. And I'm looking at her, and her name was Linda. And I said, Linda, what's all over your chest? It looks like a jellyfish. She said, what? Yeah, it looks like a jellyfish. I got closer to her. I said, oh, no, it's not on your chest. It's in it. You better go have some mammograms then. Your chest is riddled with tumors. She goes, what? I go, look, you've known me a long time. Do it. Not long thereafter, about a month or two later, she called back. Yep. Had to have a radical mastectomy. Both breasts had to be taken off and reconstructive surgery. I thought it was on her. Then I could see, oh, no, it's in her. But that clear to me. And I've been doing this my whole life. It's no big deal. You know, it's, I don't know. I can make it work, but I can't. It's so intense sometimes when The Dark Knight came out in 2008. So I went to a screening with an old friend of mine from UCLA, this girl I've known for decades. So we drove there and met at the theater. And so we, you know, we thank God we arrived separately. So we sit down and suddenly the film starts. My bladder feels like it's about to explode, burning, cramping. Oh, my God, what's this? Oh, then she gets a cell phone call from her daughter. She got to get up and leave. Okay, so she left. The minute she's gone, I'm fine. I discovered the next day that she had a really bad bladder infection. I go, next time you tell me. It was horrible. So, you know, I've lived with this all my life, and it's part of what I am. So what do you do? I mean, that's the one thing. There's a big New Age guru in Malibu, won't use his name, and he's friends with one of my oldest friends who's a writer-producer who also lives in Malibu. And this guru wanted to know if I do readings. So I told him, well, yeah, I do medical readings and criminal readings. He goes, what? He says, help people if they're sick or if they've been preyed upon by criminals, which I hate. And he said, oh, no, way too serious. Nobody wants to learn. They want to know when they're going to meet the next boyfriend or girlfriend or close the next deal. I said, I don't care about that. It's irrelevant. I worry about their life. You know, they're being healthy and secure and, you know, having a good life. So, obviously, he didn't hire me. So, here I am, and this is what's been going on. So, question is, why did I develop this unique ability? I met only one other person in my life that can do what I can do. He's a man by the name of Jack Rourke. He's also mentioned on my website. So, you know, that's what got me into this, in part.
And where are you hoping to take this? I mean, with the release of your book, you're talking about aliens above, ghosts below. Right. I mean, really, what's contained in it, and what kind of lessons can people learn?
Well, like I said, there are three sections to the book. The first part, section one, is about ghosts. And entity ghosts, poltergeists, hauntings, things like that. And that covers, like, the second chapter is called the real life entity case. The real case was 1974 to 1975, and a novel was written about it. Came out in the late 70s. A movie was released by Fox in 1983, starring Barbara Hershey and Ron Silver. What I wrote is the precise details of what the real case was about, which is far more disturbing than what they depicted in the novel and in the movie. And it looks like we may be doing a remake of that, but it'll be based on what I wrote as opposed to being based on the original novel or the original movie, which was mostly fictitious. Chapter 3 of my book is called The Hazardous Haunting. And this is another one of those incredible cases where you're in the right place at the right time and you experience things. Similar to the Entity case, is a young lady with kids being tormented and harassed by these experiences, poltergeist type things. And the more we learn about this, the stranger it gets. Right now, my gut feeling for the data I've collected and others collected strongly suggests that this phenomenon, the poltergeist, 99.99999% of it is real. It's paranormal, but it's not what we think it is. Most of it is an extension of a living human psyche. Unique individuals that their neurology is kind of messed up, the nervous system, they suffer from either being seizure-prone or epileptic, and they also have problems, sometimes a lot of times, a problem sleeping. And if they couple energetically with the localized environment, the result can be dramatic physical effects, spontaneous combustion of matter, things being moved, things appearing and disappearing, banging noises, luminous anomalies. And what's the strangest thing is, we can measure some of this now. We have handheld instruments that measure this. And it's so consistent what we're finding, it's a little depressing, because we're hoping to see something a little more. We're not. So the faces and places may change, but the events do not. They said another commonality in these cases is the environment in which they occur tends to be unique, geomagnetically, electromagnetically, somewhat anomalous. The energies are high. They irritate the nervous system of these wired individuals. And that coupling is then used by that individual to tear the place apart through their, with their mind, unconsciously or subconsciously. If you try to measure a bioelectric field of a person, that's easy to do, no big deal. Biomagnetic is almost impossible because it's very weak. You need supercooled or superconducting sensors, which they don't make in handheld devices yet. However, if you've got a poltergeist agent, which these people are, you can measure their body's magnetic field. And instead of being a few microgauss, it's over a million times over that. It means these unique individuals are pumping out magnetic fields over a million times what a normal person does. And that's why we can measure it. And the things that occur from this are extraordinary. Things disappear, reappear in front of you. Things will catch fire. Things will move in an instant. Banging noises, disembodied voices, luminous anomalies. This is all discussed in my book and on my website. And then the first chapter, called The Haunting Thought, is about several cases, but the most dramatic one is another. Is also on my website. It was a case called Hollymont. It's in Hollywood. And I got to live there with my colleague back in 76 for 10 days while the house was in escrow. And what we experienced was amazing. Things flying around, objects flying at people, thousands of pennies raining down from the ceiling when there was nothing there to make it happen, fires breaking out in the house, heavy objects being thrown at people, people being thrown around. And this is in front of us. We had a news crew come out. From then it was KTTV. And the woman and the crew, they ran out of the house screaming because of what was happening. Things were flying at them. Books, napkins, and ice cube trays were flying at them. They had a priest come in the house and bless it. His water scepter exploded, his hat disappeared. We found that on top of the roof. So, and what's unique about that environment is that there's a shallow river running under it. There's your hydromagnetic field. Two earthquake faults intersect literally a few feet away from the house, under the house. And there's a tunnel under the house connecting several homes on the hill where they used to run liquor during Prohibition. And there's a body down there with a tombstone. It says Regina 1922. And I suppose that was a murder because you're not allowed to bury people under your home even back in those days. So the cases we've run into, a few of them, are quite extraordinary. Most of the time, you go out, you interview the people, and you go home.
Sorry, Barry, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, can I ask as well, in terms of spiritual awareness, being able to see things before they happen, have you started to question your own reality kind of thing? I mean, are you ever unsure that everything is the way you think it is, and maybe perhaps you're being manipulated by powers higher than yourself? I don't know. Has that thought ever occurred to you?
Well, it's like the one thing I can personally do at a psychic level that seems to be very, I mean, as reliable as my speaking right now is by being a medical intuitive. It's never failed me, ever. It's got me in trouble, but it's never failed me. A few times I've met people And there was nothing wrong with them. And I said, there's nothing wrong with you. I mean, and they just wanted to see what I'd pick up. And, I was right. There was nothing wrong with them. But then something happens that shatters your life. I've never been married, and there's reasons for that. I mean, given the work I do, I attract women who are either, they think I'm nuts, which is certainly likely, given the work I do, or they make me look normal. Either way, we've got a big problem on our hands. I met this girl in 1977. There was an actress, been dead a long time, an actress named Mary Blanchard. She made a lot of B-movies and very exotically gorgeous. This girl I met, Judy, looked identical to Mary Blanchard. I mean, like a clone, except her voice. Everywhere we went, everyone was staring at her. Just it was like, she would. You sit down in a restaurant, go to the men's room, you come back, there'd be eight men hitting on her at the table. But that's not relevant. What is relevant is it was a perfect relationship. I met her on a case, some poltergeist activity going on. We ended up becoming friends. We started dating. We were involved. Okay, no big deal. Then the dreams came, and the dreams were that the relationship ended on August 22nd. Didn't know why, all I knew what. Now, we met on Valentine's Day of that year, so it was somewhat romantic. It was interesting. Kept having the dreams. I didn't tell her a thing, because she might have misinterpreted what I was saying as that I really wanted to get out of the relationship, and I did not. This is the only girl I could have married. I mean, the only one. We were that much compatible. We could sit in the room together. And we could, without any stimulus, we could say the same thing at the same time over and over again. It was amazing. Anyway, so the dream, kept having the dreams. All I knew, July 22nd. I don't know why I kept seeing it. I kept seeing it. What's July, why, August, whatever. And I'm not going to say it. So the date's approaching, and I'm just, I'm not thinking of it. It'll go away. Okay, I'm staying in her condo in the Hollywood Hills near the Hollywood Bowl. We wake up, she's under the covers, and she won't come out. She's crying. Why didn't I help her? Help you with what? When last night when the room lit up, I go, the room lit up? What are you talking about? What room? The bedroom. I go, what are you talking about? She says, well, the room lit up. She found herself being levitated. And, she levitated out of the bed, and then she found herself in a round metal room, and she was on a table, a metal table, and these little guys around her, they were short, they had scaly skin like reptiles, they had big black eyes that angled up, no nose, no outer ears, and they were cutting and probing and doing these things to her, hurting her. So this is under the cover. She won't come out. She's shivering. She's yelling. She's crying. Why didn't I help her? And I go, I said to her, do you know anything about UFO abductions? She goes, what? What's UFO? What are UFO abductions? I don't know what you're talking about. No. None whatsoever. Nothing. So finally coaxed her out from under the covers. Okay. Before I coaxed her out, she told me she was restrained on this table at her neck, her wrists, her ankles, and her abdomen by something like a vice, just holding her real tight. And they were cutting her hair and taking scoops out of her skin. So she comes out from under the covers. She's bleeding from her eye, bleeding from her nose, bleeding from her ear, bleeding from her rectum, from her uterus. She wasn't menstruating. She had her hair had been cut. Little scoops of flesh had been taken out of her back. And around her neck, her wrists, her ankles, and her abdomen were black and blue scars, like scar marks, like bruises. And I, what the? Anyway, she became a religious zealot after this, but of a very unusual type. The relationship ended immediately. And now what lends some credibility to what might have occurred is that people who knew nothing about what had happened, what I just described, but lived in the area, described a large glowing something hovering over that part of the Hollywood Hills that night or morning. Okay, and the clocks had literally gone dead for about 2 hours in the house. We don't know why. Just lost 2 hours of time. We don't know what happened. Now, I haven't talked to her in years, but she said she'd been re-abducted many times. Her father was a deputy station chief for the Central Intelligence Agency, who I was working with at the time. And so what does all this mean? I don't know. Why did they take her and not me? I don't know. So it's a little bit of a problem, obviously. That messed up my entire life, as you can see.
Hey, look, nothing, it's something like almost everything that's messed my life up for the worse has actually provided me the tools to make it better.
But give me that again.
Everything that has happened to me in my life that I think has made my life worse has usually provided me the tools in order to make my life itself better.
Yeah, in some ways. But I'll tell you, had this event not occurred, she and I would have been married within a year. It was that perfect of a relationship. But, I mean, obviously it wasn't meant to happen, so it didn't. And I can't imagine. And she got married to another devotee of the same avatar she worships now, back then, or whatever. And that's pretty, I discuss it in my book in Chapter 10. And then I discuss it on my website in a blog called Life-Changing Paranormal Event. And I show pictures, not of her, but of the actress that she so much resembled. I mean, it's scary. I look at this actress, and I kind of freak out because it's like a clone. The same exact physical appearance. But, you know, a long time ago, and it didn't happen, and what can you do? What can you do?
I lost my girlfriend of 2 years when I was a student in Dunedin because I got arrested for selling weed, you know? And, that kind of freaking devastated me because I loved her a lot, and she went back to Japan for a bit, and then I got arrested, and I just kind of emailed her. I was like bawling my eyes out as I was typing out the stuff on the keyboard, saying that, you know, we can't be together because of my drug convictions that I was about to get. I'd never actually be able to travel to her home country, and she didn't like it much here.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, this like I said, I tend to attract really crazy women. Like I said, either they think I'm nuts, which is, like I said, highly probable for them, or they make me look normal. If they make me look normal, I don't want to be near them. And then people say, well, why did they abduct my girlfriend and not me? And to be funny about it for a moment, I wouldn't abduct me. I mean, assuming that she was abducted, which I think she was, the evidence suggests she was. The reason she went off the deep end is there were no psychiatrists. The mental health profession didn't even touch this back then. But they wouldn't take me as I would say, I want to know what your power technology is. I want to know what your avionics are. And I want you to tell me about your propulsion systems. And if we're dealing with a sentient race, I don't think they care about what we want. They manipulate people through fear. We had an executive of a network, I can't give his name, this is decades ago, began as a poltergeist experience. Went out to his house, met his wife, a really nice couple, and he worked an executive one of the local networks. And, never had any experiences there, but it seemed to stop. Okay. This is in my book and on my website. A few months later, they're driving, taking a road trip up north, driving, and they saw what looked like a meteorite or a plane about to crash. So they drove up into the canyon, went around the curves. They come to an elevated area, and instead of seeing a meteorite smoldering or whatever, or a plane, they see a disc sitting on the ground, like on a platform, and like a landing gear. These couple small humanoids with big heads, the humanoids are doing things with the ground, and the humanoids turn towards them, and they're like, what? They aim a metallic rod, a light pops, the light flies at them, or pops, they black out. When they wake up, they're back on the freeway, and it's hours later. They have no idea what happened. And the memories started coming back over years. Meanwhile, their emotions went nuts. They had a problem dealing with it. They didn't try to seek any mental health, involvement. And back then, they wouldn't touch this anymore, let alone.
So, Barry, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we're just having a little bit of problem with your phone. It cuts out every now and again, but it's fine,
Yeah, so what happened was they got divorced. He lost his job because he became so distressed and out of it, he could no longer function at work. He was like a zombie. And this was decades ago. I don't know where he is or what he is. I haven't heard from him in a very, very long time. The same thing with his wife. And we've had other, you know, these things happen to anyone and everyone. People, normal, average people, very powerful, very professional, very wealthy people, any profession, it doesn't matter. Why does it happen to some people? We don't know. Why does it happen to not happen to others? We don't know. But what we do know is there's a link between the paranormal and UFOs in the sense that, as I've just said, some cases begin as like a close encounter of the third kind or an abduction and have paranormal fallout in terms of out-of-body experiences, spontaneous healings, telepathy, precognition. And then occasionally it begins as paranormal occurrences like poltergeist activity, and it evolves into a CE3 or an abduction. Why that is, we don't know, except the energies these technologies use are probably similar to what we call paranormal, meaning they're not electromagnetic, they're not nuclear, and they're not gravitational, but they can affect all of them. This is the more we learn about this, the stranger it gets. The best way of describing all of this is, imagine, you know, the story of the three blind men touching an elephant. So one blind man holds the elephant's leg and thinks it's a tree. No. The other blind man holds the elephant's trunk and thinks it's a hose. No. The third holds the elephant's tail, thinks it's a rope. No. They're wrong, because they can't see the elephant. This is where the field is today. We're investigating the effect of an unknown cause. There's no instruments on Earth that can measure a ghost because we don't know what the phenomena is. And if we don't know what it is, how can we measure it? All we can measure is the physical environment we know of through methods we understand. If there's other methods, they'll have to be developed over time if they prove to be reliable. The worst part of all this is the gluttony, the insanity of the paranormal reality shows that began about a decade ago. They have done more damage to parapsychology than anything. They have shot us backwards in time, maybe 75 years. They're all fraudulent. They're all staged. They're entertainment for the ignorant masses, as I describe it. And I was contacted by the creator of one of the early shows before it was even on the air. I went to meet him in his offices here in West Los Angeles, and he told me what he wanted to do, and I said, you know, nothing's going to happen most of the time. I can guarantee you it won't. Yeah, we know that. We're going to fake it. And then when it does happen, we'll make it look like a hoax. They go, well, it was nice meeting you. You want to work on the show? I go, no, don't bother me. So I didn't do it. Then another show approached me. Wouldn't do that one. Another one. Nope. I will not do a show if you ask me to lie. I won't do it. And, you know, I mean, the shows are so boring. A couple of them have actually gone to one of the cases I worked on. I mentioned in Beverly Hills on Cielo Drive. And one of them, their show was such a misrepresentation of the facts. Glaring misrepresentation. I mean, fraud. Just lie after lie. And then one of the shows, I'm watching it, and I'm in the show. Someone shot me at the house in a video back in 2006, early 2006, and they're not even in the show. They never approached me to sign a release, nor would I have even wanted to appear on the show, because the show is nothing but a pack of lies. You know, and then another group did a thing on the show. Okay, you know, the shows are entertainment. They're not meant to be anything but entertainment. If they did science, nobody would watch. Another one of my blogs on my website is called Psy Circus Sideshow. Bottom line, if you're a producer and you're doing a paranormal reality show, you've got a real problem on your hands. Something's got to happen every show. You can't have talking heads for 41 minutes out of an hour, or your ratings will be as remote as your chance of catching a ghost on video is. So what do? Well, one is you fake it. Two is you amplify and embellish and exaggerate anything that might have happened. And three is you populate the show with a lot of crazy people that are more interesting than ghosts to begin with. So that's the way the shows work. And I think the reason people watch these is to be entertained. They don't think they're going to learn anything, or to be scared by crazy people doing weird things on television.
Isn't that what television's all about?
Yeah, I mean, when I grew up, I really liked TV. There was the original Twilight Zone, there was Outer Limits, there was Star Trek, there was Alfred Hitchcock Presents, there was Thriller, there was Way Out, there was Playhouse 90. I mean, some really good writing, producing, directing. They didn't have a lot of money back then, but boy, were they creative, and it worked. And the stuff that's on now, I mean, it's boring. I can't believe how boring it is. I mean, in my book, I joke about the fact it's the future. We have 5,000 channels, and there's still nothing to see. It's crap. And they keep remaking the same things over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, they're scared doing something new because they might fail. So they just keep doing the same thing. I mean, I have a new TV. It's like one of those big, giant flat screens. And other than the news and watching some reruns of shows, movies I buy, I don't watch it that much because there's nothing to see, for me at least. You know, I can't watch the paranormal shows because I fall asleep or I start laughing at it. And then, what, the shows about people singing or the show, who cares? I could care less about that. You watch the news. I even commented on I have one of my later blogs called The Messenger of Deception. That's a title used in one of Jacques Vallée's early books. And I say that TV is basically entertainment, except for news. And now we discovered that news is not what we think it is either. They exaggerate, they embellish, they lie, they distort to get ratings. So if we can't trust the news, what can we trust? Well, you know, the news, they need ratings to get more money to do more things. So it's entertainment. Years ago, I think it was CBS or NBC, they had before the news began, they had a voiceover that was going, violence, mayhem, disaster, death, murder. And people got so outraged, they called in and wrote in and they took it off. But this is what we're seeing. It's called, if it bleeds, it leads. So the more dangerous something is, the more potentially lethal something is, the more it scares people, the more they show it. And it's just, you know,
except if it's menstruation. They kind of stay away from that if it bleeds, it leads story.
Wait, if you dropped out, it's what?
Except in the case of menstruation, because they don't like to cover that kind of if it bleeds, it leads story, because they can't trust it, because it bleeds for 7 days and doesn't die.
Right.
How can you trust that source, you know?
Yeah, the whole, you know, what's interesting is what these paranormal reality shows have done is make people believe in something that's not real. What we're seeing is everything is staged, everything's faked, everything's choreographed, everything. And it's very discerning, because how do you, and if you speak too loudly about it, I wrote a blog about a year and a half ago on December 2012 called Sign Psychosis, Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid. And I got such vitriolic hate mails from it, I couldn't believe it. I mean, people were just angry because I dared to say it. And what I said was, this field attracts more mentally ill people than any field I've ever seen in my life. I mean, in the real world, I've worked in the medical field. I own a number of medical patents. I've developed them. We're trying to get them on the market. They have nothing to do with parapsychology or ufology. They're pure electrophysiology. But this field, the paranormal, attracts every nut job out there. You don't need an education to be involved. You don't need to be, smart. You just go out there and talk about whatever comes into your head. So, you know, this is a problem. This is a real problem.
Well, how can we solve it, though?
Well, it's going to take time, and people will have to be weaned from watching these shows. But, you know, the reason they're on, one of the reasons they're on is they're cheap.
There's a problem with that, is that the CIA discovered mind control is addictive.
Yeah, well, I mean, all this is shows are aimed at a very young audience, the demographic of like 12 to 30. They're not aimed at, you know, mature adults. They're aimed at young people that have nothing better to do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should mention that, because guess what the lowest following age group is for this show? The 12 to 30-year-olds. And the highest visitors are between 45 and 65.
Wow. Yeah.
About 60% of the audience.
You know, I know a lot of people, you know, in my peer group, They don't even watch TV anymore. They just, you know, once in a while they'll rent a movie or something, but they never watch it because it's just boring to them. I watch the news. I watch reruns of some shows from long ago. That's about it. I never thought it would devolve into this. I never thought it would reach the level to where, you can put it this way. I'm waiting for the ultimate paranormal reality show could be Dead from the Neck Up. Okay, that's the title. And all it is long before there was cable TV, okay, or satellite TV, decades ago, when the station stopped broadcasting, CBS, NBC, ABC, whatever, you had video noise, and you had audio noise, just a screen with that hissing on it. And that's all the show would be. You see a title card comes on, Dead from the Neck Up. You tell the viewers that in this noise there are images of entities and ghosts and demons, whatever, of course, nonsense. But you tell them they're in there, and you tell them if you listen, you'll hear them. People will hear and see whatever you tell them to, because it's white noise, basically, a visual and auditory white noise. And there's no production cost. There's no director. There's no editor. There's no camera person. There's no writer. Just empty air and tell people there's ghosts. They'll see it. I guarantee you they'll see it. And everyone will see something a little different. Like a Rorschach. You look at something, oh, it's that. No, it's that. You see a face in a cloud. You know, they're missing the boat. How about just an empty screen, just all that old video noise? And I guarantee you people will see things. Make a ton of money.
Well, it's true. People see what they want to see to a large extent, don't they?
Right. I was on a show in 2005. I'd never heard of it before, called The Girls Next Door. It was on, what channel was it? I don't even remember what channel it was on. I got a call from the co-creator of the show, Kevin Burns, who I've known for a long time. And he's very skeptical of all this stuff. Nice guy, but very skeptical. And I said, well, what is it, Kevin? And he says, I got a case for it. I said, all right, Kevin, what is it? No, really, it's the Playboy Mansion. I go, Playboy Mansion? What, is it haunted by silicone? He didn't even get that, but, you know. So I went out there. I met the girls, Holly and Kendra and Bridget. And, there wasn't that much going on, but it was interesting meeting everyone. Holly was attractive. Kendra was like not all there. She's like floating in the void somewhere. And Bridget had a history of paranormal activity around her, like poltergeist stuff, a poltergeist agent. And we measured 5 Gauss coming off her body, which is impossible. She's a poltergeist agent. So I said, when she leaves, the phenomenon will leave with her. She left. It did. So on the show, Holly said, we got gypped. We asked Dr. Taffier, blah, blah, blah. I told him the truth. What's causing this? Is the ambient magnetic background being higher than normal? Bridget, being a poltergeist agent, is acting as what I call a biological operational amplifier. In electronics, they have it called op amps. And I think some people's bodies act as that, where they take in the energy, they mix it up with their own, and they re-emit it, guided by their subconscious, and make things happen. And this is what Bridget was doing. She left the phenomena stop. What a surprise. It was an interesting meeting. Half, it was a lot shorter than I thought he was, but he seemed like a really nice person. And, I'd never been at the mansion before, so I was in taking a tour of it. It was a lot smaller than I thought it was. And it was fun. They paid me well for the show. I can't complain. They weren't a signatory to any of the guilds, so they reran it like 20 times. I didn't get any more money, but, you know, I can't complain. Trying to think. Well, what amazes me is that for example, the most amazing case we have was the San Pedro case, because we learned stuff from it that helped us clarify many of the areas we didn't understand that clearly. Make it long story short, it's chapter 3 of my book called The Hazardous Haunting. And the reason I call it A Hazardous Haunting is the woman who lived there was named Jackie Hernandez. That was her married name. Her maiden name was Jackie Hazard. And the case was hazardous to her environment, and to one of our assistants, Jeff Wheatcroft. In the book, you'll read about it. Chapter 3, I discuss it also on my website and several blogs. One of the early times we were at the house, something grabbed Jeff's camera out of his hands. He came shaking. He was white as a sheet. Another time, he was up in the attic, which was, you know, looking for the weird noises, banging. Something wrapped a clothesline around his neck in a bowling knot. And it picked them up over one of the bolts in the rafters And if another one of our friends wasn't there, Jeff would have been strangled. He would have died. It's amazing. This is in Barry Conrad's video, An Unknown Encounter. I don't even know if those are being sold anymore. It came out, like, I think it was 1997 or 8 in video. So you can look for it online. It's Unknown Encounter by Barry Conrad. And then, okay, so then Jackie finally moves from there, from San Pedro, a little bungalow on 11th Street. She moves all the way to Weldon, which is in Bakersfield, about 375 miles north of Los Angeles. They go after Barry and Jeff. I couldn't because my father just had a heart attack, and I wasn't available. So more things happened, objects moving around, luminous anomalies they captured, things happening. It was amazing. Jeff gets levitated into the air and knocked out. This is all in the video discussed in my book. Okay, so then Jackie finally comes back to San Pedro visiting some friends. She's staying in a motel, and we discover, as Jackie does, that the little place she used to live in, you know, new people have rented it, they start having experiences there. But meanwhile, things are still happening with Jackie. What? Like, wait a minute, it can't be both. Well, it made us think of this entire area as something a little different than the way we thought normally. This whole area, this whole arena of phenomena may be more, for lack of a term, contagious, meaning it has biological qualities in the sense that, let's say you're healthy. You go over to your friend's house. They got a couple kids. They're sick. You don't touch anyone. You wear a mask. You try not to breathe too much. You go home. You're fine. You get sick. You give it to your family. We know what that is. It's a vector pathogen. Okay, we understand that. It's contagious. There's something similar to that going on in this area. The environment is charged in a certain way with information and energy of a type we don't yet understand. It's not energy we can even name because there isn't a name for it. Zero point, over unity, I don't know, vacuum energy. And if the person's susceptible to it, I mean, their body's wired a little uniquely, it alters them in some way. It charges them up. They take it away from the source, and they re-emit it, causing phenomena when they are. And then it bleeds off, and it stops. And we've seen this at a number of different cases that happened with the entity case in San Pedro. It happened with other cases. So, again, in science, your theory must conform to your data. You do not only look for data that conforms to your theory. That's quackery. And the evidence indicates that what I'm saying, that this contagion thing is real. But what is it? It's not electromagnetic. It's not gravitational as we know it. It's not nuclear. There's nothing left yet. For example, but the way in which this energy couples with us, couples with our bodies, with our biological structure or our physiology, appears to be magnetic, like if you shield the environment magnetically with Gyron or Mu metal, the phenomenon stops because it can't couple with your body to make it work. But we don't know what it is. You know, it's like imagine you're in a lake and you see a wake going by your boat, but you don't see the boat. You see, well, there's a wake there, but what's producing the wake? That's where we are. That's the problems we're facing with them right now. We don't know where we are. No one knows what this is.
Well, I think it's promising that you've at least discovered this phenomenon in the first place, because the first thing towards the road of understanding is simply discovery.
Exactly. And if you can't replicate things in the lab, in the field stuff, you can't, because there's so many variables we cannot control. If you can't replicate it in the lab, which is really problematic, you then look at the longitudinal data to see if there's continuity in the pattern, if there's a pattern that's emerged. And the pattern is clear as day. It's the same thing over and over and over. The question is, if you don't ask the right questions, the problem is, if you don't ask the right questions specifically, know what questions to ask, listen to what they say and how they say it, and then take measurements of the environment and of the people, you will learn nothing. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people are still living in the beliefs that from the late 19th century, all this stuff is dead people floating around. I met this famous psychic. I was on a show in the mid-90s called The Other Side. Ron Ziskin co-created it. It was the first and only paranormal talk show. It was great. was on it 7 times, met a lot of nice people there, good friends with Ron Ziskin and other people. Reconnected with some old friends. But I was in the green room once waiting to go on, and there was this guy in there. I didn't recognize him. And he said, told me who he was. I said, no, I don't know who you are. And he told me what he did. He's a medium or whatever. Claims he talks to dead people. And he said, do you believe in what I do? I went, no, you don't. I said, no. Everything you claim to do in terms of talking to dead people, we did at UCLA in the lab, and there were no dead people floating around. It's telepathy, it's precognition, it's clairvoyance. And, you know, in order to prove it's not that, you've got to rule everything else out first, and no one can do that. I said, if you tell people you're reading their mind, they go to sleep on you. It doesn't impress them. But if you tell them you're talking to your dead Aunt Mary or your dead Uncle John, then they throw money at you. Oh, what are they saying? And they throw money at you. So he said, well, what would convince you that I'm talking to dead people? I said, okay, you're on camera. It's a 3-camera shoot. The apparition of the dead person appears, and it's captured on at least 2 of the 3 cameras showing parallax. That would give me a lot more comfort in believing what you're saying. I believe in ghosts and all this stuff, but I think the nature of it is far more complex than we've ever imagined. And that's why I wrote my book. There were so many quacks out there and con artists. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. And when we had the lab at UCLA, the work in the lab was to take normal, healthy, functional people who are non-therapy or analysis and see if we could enhance whatever latent, inherent psychic abilities they had. Okay. So, we did it year after year, year. It says in my book, the blog is called Learned Psi, Training to be Psychic. Yeah, some people developed well, most didn't. And the patterns we saw indicated that time and space are an illusion when it comes to this mechanism, this ability. The past information still exists. The future's information very likely already exists. And the information of things at a distance are everywhere. So there was a song in the 70s by Joe Cocker called Everything is Beautiful. I think he did that. Everything is beautiful. Anyway, my version of that was everything is everywhere. And the way to describe this is if you take a normal 8x10 photo, you cut it in half, you get half or a quarter or eighth. If you take a hologram and cut it in pieces, each piece will recreate the whole. Because the mechanism that created it was equally distributing the information in the medium. Okay. Evidence suggests part of our brain works like this. Consciousness may work like this. Space-time may work like this. And this is the only theory that basically the data supports, that our ability to access the past, the future, things at a distance, is tuning into that information. The question is, what's the carrier for that? What's carrying the information? We know what it is in our world. It's with radio waves and microwaves and this and that. But with this, we don't understand what the carrier is.